All right, welcome, big dogs. This is the Thursday noon call. Chris Alcido here, and appreciate you guys all joining. As I said, go ahead and get your questions in. While we're waiting on questions, I'm going to go ahead and jump into a topic here. We do record and archive all these calls, and I want to make sure you guys are always getting something to learn. So let's find something to talk on. So let me jump into REI Matcher. In fact, let me show you guys here. I'll show my screen for a second. So there's REI Matcher, right? You go to training, Big Dog Texas down here, and this is where you end up. Okay. And then let's see, Kimberly's Corner. We can go to Kimberly's Corner. Not found. That's not good. Uh-oh. I may have to reload that. Let's see here. Oh, no. And I was going to, you know what? Let me try reloading REI Matcher altogether. Hang on a second here, guys. Stop showing my screen for a second here. I may have messed that up myself. Let's see. Training, Big Dog Texas. Yep, there we go. All right. So there's Kimberly's Corner. I had clicked the same link too many times, and it just, I guess, put us in a dead spot. Anyway, so Big Dog Texas training, then go into Kimberly's Corner right here, and this is where you end up, okay? Now, Kimberly has organized a lot of stuff that we use regularly on here. And one of the things is Shinoa's Big Dog intro slide. So if you're new and you've not seen these before, let me just click into them real quick here. Because these are the intro slides that you see sometimes at the REIAs that are going on behind the scenes. But these are topics, right? And they're hyperlinks. So you can find topics. Let's see, I don't know, private lending, right? Let's say I've been getting a lot of questions on private lending. I can click on that, and it should take us, come on. Well, should have took us to page 66. Let's just go down to 66. Let's see here. Man, this thing is just not working well today, is it? What page is that? Does it say? I know it's not 63. Stuck. I don't think these links are working for some reason. Yeah, they must be having... I tell you what, let's do this instead. Because that's a hyperlink PDF. Let's do this. Let's go to... private lending. Like I said, I've been getting a lot of questions on this. So let's just cover some private lending, the process, the flow, how to do it real quick. I know a lot of you guys are interested in becoming private lenders. Some of you have money and money to lend. But it's also very important to understand lending if you're a borrower, okay? And that's something that a lot of people overlook. So if you're going to borrow private money or any mortgage, right? It's important that you know the mortgage process as well so you don't get taken advantage of. Okay? So let's cover a few things in here while we're, again, waiting on questions. If you guys have questions, don't hesitate. Let's see. That's a PDF. I don't know what this is. Let's see what it is. Become a private lender. Yeah, so this is just some teaching. I remember Shinoa putting that together. It's really good. I'm not going to go through that one today. You can go through that yourself. But basically, the gist of this is to, if you want to become a lender, you need to become a PI, private investigator, a CIA agent, a FBI. You got to do a lot of investigating. Okay. So it's a great, presentation there. If you want to be a private lender, go through and look at that. Let's see. This is private lending. Okay. Let's look at this. So private lending, these are best practices. Let's cover the best practices real quick, because there's one, let's cover the best practices. And then there's one document that I use kind of like a master, and it's a really good document that, Phil and Shanoa have put together, and very, very important. And with just a few things, you can actually become a pretty efficient private lender. Okay. So let's start with this. Best practices, private lending. So number one, always get a non-homestead affidavit signed at closing, okay? In a business purpose affidavit, meaning, hey, this is not my homestead. It's a non-homestead affidavit. I certify I'm not going to use this as a home. Why? Because different laws apply to a homestead versus a non-homestead. If you own an investment property, different laws apply to that with regards to your lender. Versus if it's your homestead. If it's your homestead, you have more protection against creditors, right? When they, if something happens and they need to recover that collateral, okay? And make sure the investor is not moving into the property, right? So that's the non-homestead part. Always get a first lien position. You always want a first lien. If you're loaning a second lien position, I won't say you can't do that. It's an advanced strategy. You want to be super careful, okay? But always get a first lien position. Like I said, second liens, you can do them. It's a very advanced strategy. I'm not going to go into it here, but I will tell you, I do second liens. I do second liens on properties where I hope the lien holder, the first lien holder, goes into default, right? Or even the second lien holder, right? Where I have a chance to foreclose. And if the first goes into default, I can still foreclose on that property, okay? Because part of my second lien is the fact that the first lien is maintained. And so when you stop maintaining the first lien, you're in violation of the second lien. So now I can foreclose all your assets to the second lien holder. Now, if I do that, I'm foreclosing my loan position subject to the first. So I still had to pay that first. But like I said, I make seconds where I hope to get that property, even including the first lien. Okay. So you can see where that strategy can go, right? Let's see. The borrower will sign a note and a deed of trust. It has to be recorded. That's the deed of trust gets recorded. The note doesn't actually get recorded. Okay. Allows for non-judicial foreclosure in Texas. Again, that's the deed of trust. The deed of trust, what you want is you want what's called a power of sale, because Texas is a judicial and a non-judicial state. It's mostly non-judicial because nobody wants to go through the judicial process. It's stupid and expensive and bureaucratic, right? So make sure your deed of trust, if you're a lender, your deed of trust has a power of sale in it, okay? That makes things much easier and puts it into the non-judicial category for foreclosure should that have to occur. Always close in a title company, okay? And wire money to the title company, not the borrower directly. So when you're funding a deal, make sure it's closing with a title company. The title company is going to be the one to draft and draw all your documents. Okay. They're going to be the one to check that the borrower at closing has certain things like insurance. Okay. And that you're listed on that insurance, has obtained for you, or you have obtained a survey if you required one, right? Things like that. So always close in a title company. I see a lot of deals and a lot of investors, even very experienced investors, investors with very good reputations. I see them still doing some desktop closings, right? Or even attorney office closings. And I do not recommend that at all. Okay. It's a great way for a deal to go bad. For something to get missed and have no accountability to that something, okay? So always close with a title company. I've actually had attorneys, right, buying property offer to just close it themselves and save me the money. I'm like, yeah, no, okay? Because I am the seller. You're my buyer. I can't be your client. Mm-hmm. So you have no recourse if you don't close this correctly and I get screwed, right? Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot.
I'm sorry. Hang on, guys.
You okay? Sorry, my dog was snoring. So always close at a title company, okay? Wire the money to the title company. They are a trustee, okay? So the title company holds that money in trust. That's why, you know, let's say you're putting forward money to reinstate a loan for somebody before you can close on it to save it from foreclosure. Okay. I would never do that. Number one. Number two, if I did have to do that, and have I done it before? Yes. Again, advanced strategy. But I make the homeowner, the seller, sign a deed over to me. But I don't record it, right? I give it to the title company to hold in trust. They're not going to give it back to the homeowner. They're going to hold it and make sure that homeowner closes. If the homeowner doesn't close, then they're going to record it for me. Okay. So that's the leverage to force the homeowner to the table even after his loan's been reinstated. Now he's got no pressure to close and sell to me. Okay. I do have a contract, and that deed's going to enforce that contract. So a lot of things like that, right? To always close at a title company. Okay. Always make sure you review the title commitment. You just want to make sure it's got clear title. And even as much as I know about title, I can review a title policy and get, you know, 80, 90% of it correct. It's a world of its own. And so even if I can clearly see that the title is clear or will be cleared by closing, right? Because when you close and record certain releases and documents, it cleans up title that allows it to close and record new documents, right? And a lot of those things do get cleared at closing just automatically. So, you know, you've got to know what gets cleared at closing, what's going to survive closing and be a mess that you have to clean up later. You don't want to close over that. I always call the title company and I say, okay, we're getting ready to close here and, you know, or whenever I've got this title policy, I want you to walk through it with me. Tell me what my requirements are for clear and insurable title, insurable, not marketable, insurable title. Okay. Because that's a higher standard than marketable. So, always, you know, work with the title company and have them review that commitment, with you, right? Make them tell you anything outstanding. Require the borrower maintain the property. That's just going to be in your mortgage. Require the borrower pay taxes and HOA invoices, right? That's going to be in the mortgage. It's written in there that the borrower will maintain taxes. And because it's in the mortgage, if they don't pay the taxes, guess what? They're in default of the mortgage. You can foreclose, right? So most people don't realize that, right? And they say, you know, let's say you loan somebody money in December and, you know, they buy this property in December and come January 31st, they're in the middle of a rehab and they don't pay taxes, okay? They've got until January 31st to pay taxes here in Texas. And if they don't pay those taxes by January 31st, guess what? They're in default. Okay. You could technically foreclose on that mortgage. Now, are you going to do that? Probably not. It's probably a, you know, private lending. It's somebody, you know, it's somebody who's trusting you. Right. And somebody comes to me and says, yeah, I know I'm not, you know, I'm getting ready to put it on the market. I'll pay them at closing. Right. I'll pay a month late penalty. But I don't want to lay out the cash right now. Right. Are you going to let that ride? Sure. I'll let it ride, you know, because I know it's the truth. I've done it myself. Right. But technically you could do it, right? So just be aware, right? If you have an inkling that there's problems with the loan and one of the things they didn't do is pay taxes, then go ahead and use that, right? To leverage yourself, into a better, position or situation. Okay. Let's see. Same thing for HOA. Make sure the borrower gets insurance policy at the time of closing and funding paid on, the HUD one. And so, you're going to require that the homeowner get insurance or that your borrower get insurance. Make sure they're getting the right kind of insurance. That's why I use Mike Monzingo, because if they're not using the right kind of insurance, if they go to their, you know, local Allstate agent, right? I have Allstate for some of my personal stuff because I've had them for, you know, 20 years, 30 years. And I go to Allstate and I say, hey, I'm buying this house over here. I'm going to flip it. Right. So it's going to be vacant. Can you put me in a policy that'll cover that? They're going to say yes. And they're going to give me probably a rental policy, which absolutely does not cover this property while I'm rehabbing. Okay. It only covers a property that's had a lease on it or in between leases. Okay. It does not cover a property that does not have a lease on it. So, and it may have a gap period, right? I say, hey, this is a new property. I'm getting ready to lease it. I need, you know, a renter's policy. Yeah, they'll cover that, right? But you're not working on it. What you really need, I think, in that situation is called a builder's risk, right? Policy. because it covers it while it's vacant, it covers it while it's being worked on, it covers it with, you know, third-party contractors and vendors and construction crews and all that. And it's very, very important because I've seen deals go bad because, or I've seen, you know, investors lose a lot because they had the wrong kind of policy. Because when something happens, the house burns down, and I go to Allstate and I say, hey, man, the house burned down because my contracting crew had an accident. They're going to say, yeah, well, you're not covered. I say, well, but you said I was. And they're going to say, yeah, but you accepted this policy, which doesn't cover you. So we have no liability. And that's true. So very, very important that you're doing your insurance correctly. Okay. And also make sure it's that you have that you're listed on it as an insured, right? You should be either a principal or additional insured on that policy. Yeah. It's going to be their policy. They own the property, but you're going to be an additional insured. You're a lender, right? And you know how if you've got a home mortgage, your lender is listed on your insurance policy, right? And if they're not, you're in default of that mortgage. So very, very important. Okay. Let's see next. Make sure you are listed on the mortgagee's clause and the borrower's insurance. There you go. So verify on the deck page you're on that. Require the borrower to maintain insurance on the property and verify. So if it goes past like a 6-month period, make sure they're getting an updated policy. Always make sure they have a current policy on that. You want to catch it, you know, put reminders and ticklers in your systems. Catch that policy date expiration before it expires. Okay. So that you're ready to cover a gap and not let that property go uninsured. Let's see. Due diligence. Make sure the borrower actually has a deal. Do your own CMA and repair estimate and other due diligence. This, if nothing else, is the most important one. Okay. If you're a private lender, and here's the challenge, and I know this is a challenge for you guys. Okay. Because a lot of people come into this program new. They, you know, they get into the network. They've got money to lend. They don't know, you may not know a lot about investing yet, but you've got money to lend, and having money to lend and being a lender is a great way to find deals and have deals come to you. Okay. But guess what? The truth is you have to be a better lender than the borrower you're lending. I'm sorry. You have to be a better investor than the investor you're lending to. If you want to be a private a lender, okay? And that's my own quote. I made that up. So you got to be a better investor than the investor you're lending to protect your money. In other words, just because you're lending to an experienced investor, even an experienced big dog investor, doesn't mean your money is safe. You have to know your money is safe. You have to do your own due diligence. So you're going to do a CMA on that property. You're going to go look at that property. You're going to do a repair scope yourself, see if it matches theirs. If you're an experienced lender, yeah, you can take their repair scope, walk through the property with it and see what they've missed, right? Or what's not being accounted for. You want to make sure that they're not half baking the repairs on the property, right? And that it's going to have a difficult time selling for what the true ARV is, right? Because, hey, if you want to borrow $300,000 from me and, you know, $100,000 is to the principal purchase and $100,000 is for rehab. And I'm just making these numbers up, make the math work for my pea brain. Okay. $100,000 for the purchase and $100,000 that I'm going to give you on draws for the rehab. And that makes, you know, after you put $100,000 in, that makes that property worth $300,000, right? That's a 66% LTV, loan to value. I'll do that. I'll absolutely do that, right? And be excited for it. But when you buy that property, you know there's not an obligation for you to do the full $100,000, right? The mortgage doesn't require that. So, you know, that's just good business sense. That borrower could actually say, hey, instead of putting in $100,000, I'm going to try and shortcut the heck out of this. Instead of making $100,000 profit, you know, less, you know, carrying expenses and all that, I'm going to make $150,000, right? Because I'm only going to put $50,000 into the rehab instead of the $100,000. Well, I looked at the repair scope of $100,000, right? And you're borrowing $100,000, on the repair side, right? Now you don't have all that money at once. I'm going to give it to you in draws. But You know, but if you decide, hey, I'm going to put just 50 into it, now that house may not have an ARV of 300. It may have an ARV of 250, right? And so now everything's different. So so you've got to be, you know, you know, make sure that you are doing the due diligence on this project to make sure it is a deal. So that's how you protect your money, okay? All right, let's get through these real quick here and get to this other document. We only have a couple questions, guys. Let's see. Yeah, so they're going to be pretty quick. So let me go ahead and go through this. And like I said, don't let me distract you too much. Just keep bringing your questions if you got them. All right, let's see. Continuing best practices. Require a recent survey of the property. Right? You want to know about any FEMA issues, floodplains, et cetera, et cetera. So always require a survey. Okay. And on the contract, always require the survey be part of the title policy. And let me show you guys how to do that real quick. This is something that a lot of people miss. This is kind of a big deal. And it is, now let me see if this is blank. A lot of times these are filled out. I've got them filled out. Yeah, it's a blank one. Okay, so let me. All right, so if you see this contract right here, all right, here's how you tie the survey to the title policy. You see this title policy right here, number 6. Okay, title policy and survey. Right. So if you look right here, number 6A8, standard printed exception to discrepancies, conflicts, shortages in area boundary lines, encroachments or protrusions or overlapping improvements will not be amended or deleted from the title policy. Right. Or option 2 will be amended to read shortages in area. Right. So you always, always, always want to check number 2. Okay. That it will be amended. That puts it into the title policy. Now, to do that, they're going to charge you. It's part of the title insurance. Your title insurance just went up. Whoever's paying that, if the seller's paying it, the seller typically on a retail transaction, right? Seller always pays the title policy. If you're a buyer, investor buyer, you may be paying all closing costs, and that's fine. But you've got to decide who pays it. Now, I always just check buyer on here so that my seller can't complain about anything. They can't say, hey, I'm not paying for that. That would actually give them an out in the contract, right? So I just put buyer. And why do I do that? Because it's pennies on the thousands of dollars, okay? A title policy costed me, you know, $2,000. This probably cost me, I don't even know, right? $20, $40, $80, doesn't matter. It's kind of in that range and it can save your bacon big time, right? Plus, now the title you know, insurer is going to be looking at your survey, making sure you have one because it's a requirement, and making sure that you know, that there are no problems with encroachments or anything like that on it, okay? So that's a big one people miss when filling out a contract, and it's very, very important, okay, with regards to the survey. All right. Make the borrower bring dollars to the closing table so that the lender is better protected. Lower that loan to value. Remember I said, hey, I'm loaning you $200,000. You sell it for $300,000, you know, or it's going to be worth $300,000. That's a 66% LTV. That's what a loan to value. But let's say I was loaning you $250,000, right? So $250,000, I don't even know. Let's see. 250 divided by 300, that's an 83% loan to value, right? I would not do that, okay? At most, I'm going to do a 70% loan to value, okay? So 210,000 is the most I would loan on a $300,000 value, okay? But even at that, let's say somebody wanted, you know, 250,000. I'm going to say, no, I'll loan you 70%, 210. You need to bring 40 to the table. Okay. Or And as a private lender, here's your other option. Okay. And this is why Shinoa puts it this way. So that the lender's better protected, lower that loan to value. There's no requirement that you have to loan at 70%. Let's say this is what they're asking for is 70% LTV. So it should be pretty safe. But let's say their project is seemingly pretty risky, right? Let's say for some reason they're doing something with a property, turning it into a bed and breakfast and going to sell the building as a bed and breakfast building. Okay, that's a riskier proposition. Now you got to find somebody who's looking to buy a business, right? That wants to buy the structure to build a business around. And so I'm saying, hey, that's a little more risky, right? If you were fixing something, selling it as a house, I know what to expect. Selling it as an Airbnb and modifying this property this way, tell you what, I'm only going to loan 60%. So you now need to bring 10% in cash to the deal to buy down that, you know, your deal, right? Because I'm not going to loan you 70. I'm only going to loan you 60. You need 70 to acquire it and do the rehab. You know, then you've got to put 10% into it. That lowers my risk as a lender. Okay. And gets them skin in the game. So that's what's meant by that. Okay. Cross collateralization. You can cross collateralize a loan. Let's say a borrower says, well, I don't have 10,000 or I don't have 10%, to bring into this deal. I don't have the cash. That's why I'm borrowing it from you. But I tell you what I do have. Instead of me putting 10% in here, I've got a property over here that's paid off. I will let you put a 10% lien against that property. Okay. So I'm going to put a lien against that property and then go ahead and give them the 70%, right? Because now my 70% is really 60% if I consider the 10% lien I have against this other property. And if they default on this loan, guess what? I get to take that other property. I get to take it all, right? For that 10% that they blew. So you can cross collateralize. That's what that means. You don't have another property? Hey, that Bentley out in the driveway that paid off. Okay, great. I'll put a lien on your Bentley. Okay. So other ways to do that, right? But that's cross collateralization. Just get other collateral to secure the loan. Doesn't always have to be the primary subject property. Okay. Require monthly payments instead of a lump sum on the back end. So always make them pay monthly payments. Make them pay that flat interest rate. Make them pay you monthly. That's a gauge on how they're doing cash flow wise. Okay. Because if they don't have the money to pay you, then they're putting it all into the property and they may be getting behind. Maybe they've put everything into the property and they don't have enough to keep that property going. Maybe they're not paying their subs, stuff like that. And you're going to start getting, subcontractors putting liens on this property. Okay. So that's another thing is when you, we'll cover that here in a second on repairs. I think this goes into it, but require the payments. Now, have I let an investor push payments to the back? I have, right? Have I let them push points to the back? Always get the points up front too. But have I let them push points to the back? I have. Why have I done that? For the same reason that I'm willing to give somebody a second lien, because I hope they default. I want to foreclose or take this property from them because it's a great deal. Okay. And me lending on it is a great deal, especially if they default and I get this property, right? For my loan balance. So I'm willing to do that. But again, it's risky, advanced strategy, not something you would normally do. Okay. So get payments and your, loan originator or your, points up front. Never give all the repair money up front. Okay, this is what I was talking about. Create a draw schedule and verify work's been done prior to cutting a check to the borrower. So in other words, remember that, hey, here's $100,000. Okay, you did the purchase. Now I've got $100,000 here and I'm going to give it to you in four parts, right? You've given me a repair, an itemized repair list and we've broken it into four sections, right? And when you do these items, I'm going to give you $25,000. You're going to do these items. When these items are done, I'm going to come out and inspect those items. I'm going to see that those items were done. And I'm going to see that you got from your contractor a partial lien release for $25,000 worth of work against this property, right? Then I'll give you the next $25,000, and we're going to do the same thing for the whole rehab allotment. Okay, so never give the $100,000 up front. All right. Okay. Now, have I done that? Yes, I've done that. When have I done that? Same reason that I would, you know, take a second lien. You know, same reason I let people push payments and points to the back of the loan, because I'm hoping they default and I want to foreclose on it and take it away from them. Okay. So yeah, I'll give you all the money up front, let you mismanage it, because I'm hoping to get this property from you. Right. Now, in all fairness, when I do those things, I am doing it on great deals, and I'm doing it with friends, family, big dogs. And I'm telling them, you know, every week I'm saying, I can't wait till you default on this and I take this property from you. Right. So it's kind of a joke. It wouldn't happen. And if it did, they would make good on it. Right. And not fight me on anything. So, you know, tongue in cheek there, but that's the reason I would do it. And I would, and I have, let's see, talk about the prepare money, get a personal guarantee, signed if you're lending to an LLC, meaning, if John Doe, you know, new big dog goes out, starts a new LLC, borrows money from me, and he's borrowing it in the name of the LLC, that LLC has no history behind it whatsoever, no credit whatsoever, no nothing. So if I loan to the LLC and then John mismanages the project and I have to foreclose on the LLC, am I getting my property back? Absolutely. I'm going to foreclose and get my property back. But if there's a shortage now, right, because the project's been so mismanaged, nothing's been put into the property. In fact, it's now worse than it was when we began, and I have to put money into this project to get out of the property as a lender, right? Typically, I could go to the LLC and say, hey, since you defaulted on this loan and did this, I want additional, you know, if you've got resources here, you should have used the resources in the LLC to pay this loan. So the LLC may have a bank account that's got $100,000 in it. And you default on this loan. Well, I'm going to access that $100,000, right? If the LLC has nothing, they don't have that $100,000. They got nothing. Then I got nowhere to go, right? Because I can't break the veil of that LLC. But if John signed a personal guarantee in addition to me lending to the LLC, what happens? Number one, his LLC is performing and building credit and building a history. Number two, if the LLC defaults and I have to foreclose on them, I also have John personally guaranteeing that LLC to pay the loan back. So if the LLC doesn't, I now have John to pay it back and I can go after his personal assets. Okay. So that's a personal guarantee. If the loan goes bad, you can take a deed in lieu of foreclosure if you get an updated title commitment. So yes, if the loan goes bad, you know, always negotiate a deed in lieu. That means, hey, borrower, instead of you foreclosing on me and taking this property back, let me just deed it back to you, right? With a big apology. And I say, hey, great. We'll do that. But let me run a title search first, because you mismanaged the project. And if you've got 20 vendors out there with, you know, $10,000, $20,000 in liens against this property, you can't give me that title back unless you pay those liens off, right? I have to foreclose on you to clean those liens off. Okay, so sometimes you cannot do a deed in lieu. That's why you always run an updated title commitment or a rundown on before you take a deed in lieu back. Okay, or you can foreclose, get rid of the liens that may be on the property, right? Or do a loan modification. I've done this too, right? My loans, if you borrow from me, say you borrow a 6-month loan, it's going to automatically renew when you don't pay it off in exactly 6 months. You get an automatic 90-day renewal or 90-day extension. Okay. And guess what? That extension comes with 2 points. You now owe me 2 points, 2 more points. Okay. So that's incentive to pay that loan on time. Okay. Or to make arrangements with me in advance. And so you owe me the 2 points. Oh, you can't pay the 2 points. Well, guess what? It was an automatic extension. You're still into this loan. Now you can't pay these 2 points that you owe me for the extension that kicked in. You're now in default of the loan. I'm taking the property back. Right. So a lot of ways to skin this cat, okay? But that's private lending, okay? So let's see here. There was another. There is one document here that I want to cover real quick. And I say real quick. Let me see what kind of questions we got. Uh, Yeah. Okay. So just a couple questions. They're going to be pretty quick. Let me cover this real fast here. Okay. This is a private money term sheet, right? Shinoa built this and it's phenomenal. And she's got here standard. This is the standard practice, right? From a traditional lender. And here is the revision, meaning for my private loan. Okay. And this was a, I don't know if this was hers already in here, or if this was, probably one of my deals. In fact, let's take that out. Not that it matters. I guess it's not coming out. This sheet right here is the sheet I use when I'm making a loan as my funding instruction sheet. Okay, because this has everything on it. So let's go through these real quick. I don't want to spend too much time because I definitely want to get these questions done and respect your time and try and get done by one. But here's what's going on. Borrower credit check, right? You have the right to check a borrower's credit. So this is a fee that they pay you, right? Because for you to check somebody's credit, let's say you have a service, but it costs you $15 every time you do it. You just make them pay the $15. And when we talk about junk fees and trash charges from lenders, in my opinion, right, a crappy lender, and they may not be a crappy lender, I look at lenders kind of like politicians, right? They're going to tell you what they want you to hear, tell you what you want to hear, do what they want. Because they'll take that $15 credit check fee and charge you $30. Hey, you want a loan from me? $30 credit check fee. I go and pay $15 to run credit on you. I just made $15. I think that's crappy. Okay? I think that's crap. You know, make it up in points, make it up in interest. But to saddle me with, you know, $3,000 worth of closing costs on this crappy little tiny loan that I should have been able to close for $700. Make that up somewhere else. But here's what I do. I waive this. Okay. Because I'm not running credit. I know the big dog, right? And chances are I want this property. If they default, I'd love to have this property, right? So I hope they have bad credit. I don't hope they have bad credit, but I don't care about their credit. Okay. Put it that way. Run a background check. Okay. Again, it's an investor I know. It's private lending. I don't have to do this. Normally, again, you pay that in advance. I waive this. Now, if I'm doing a loan to somebody I don't know, I may actually do a background check. Okay. Now, I always just do pass through costs. It costs me $15 to run a criminal background check on you. Then I'm only charging you $15. You're going to give that to me up front to do this. Borrower experience, a resume. So I asked the borrower for their portfolio. Hey, show me what properties you've done. So here's a big hint. If you are flipping properties, rehabbing properties, you need to be building a portfolio of every property you do, including financials. Okay. Show the profits you're making. Show the work you're doing. Show, you know, the project, the pictures before and after. Right. So the lender has more comfort with you in loaning you this property because, oh, hey, this guy's done, you know, 8 properties in the past year and done great on them all. Right. Yeah. I'm feeling pretty good about loaning to you. Okay. Personally, again, depending, and I think this is just the last one I did. I don't even know. So I waived that. Okay. Property appraisal and a CMA, ARV CMA. So I did this. Okay. And so I marked that as completed just for me. So I'd know, hey, I've got that checked and done. Project work breakdown with bids and timeline. I got that from my borrower. Okay. I reviewed it. I went out and inspected the property. Looked at their bid against that. And we worked through any questions I had or had them, you know, do corrections or whatever. That's completed. So now I know that's done. Project exit strategy with a timeline. Hey, what are you going to do with this property? You flipping it? You renting it? Going to refi? I mean, what are you doing, right? So I review that process, okay? Processing and underwriting fee. And actually, I guess this may be Shinoa's standard because I always processing and underwriting fee, I always charge $350 right here, okay? For processing and underwriting, what does that mean? means for me doing all this other crap that I got to do to make sure I'm giving a good loan to a good borrower. Okay. So it is okay to charge for these things. It's okay to charge somebody for the work. That's appropriate, right? And an underwriting fee, I'm the underwriter, right? It's a private loan. I'm the only one doing this. I'm the one doing all the due diligence. I'm the one doing the rehab review. I'm the one, you know, coming up with the CMA. I'm the one taking the time to work with the title company on drafting what docs, and, you know, to close this loan and this, that, and the other. So I'm going to charge for that time, right? Loans aren't free. And when you make a loan, you should never pay anything to make somebody else a loan. Any cost associated with that loan is always passed off to the borrower, okay? Loan amount, okay? It's just your typical loan amount, right? What's the loan amount you're doing? The interest rate, right? Amortization, it's interest only, okay? Interest only loans just mean you pay interest on it. The principal does not reduce. You owe the full principal at the end of the loan. What's the term, right? 6 months. If it's a rehab, it's probably a 6 month loan, right? Points paid at origination, 2. Okay. 2 points. Points paid at payoff, right? 0, right? Now you could have 0 here and 2 here. That's pushing those to the back of the loan, right? Which, like I said, sometimes I'll allow. It just depends. It's guaranteed minimum interest. Okay. They've got 6 months here. I got a problem with that one. Right. You know, most the full term just means you can't pay it off. You have to pay, interest on the full term. I wouldn't sign that either. So if I am borrowing money from you and I say, hey, I want a 6 month loan, and you give me a 6 month loan and say, okay, and you want a 6 month guarantee, I'm going to say, hey, I'll give you a 4 month guarantee because I may get this project done quicker. Right. And I'll pay you off. And maybe we have a provision in there that, hey, if I pay this off in less than 6 months, I'll pay you an extra point. Okay. Now I decide, hey, is it worth paying off early and paying a point? Or do I just go ahead and pay the interest, right? I'm going to pay the lesser of the two, right? Because I can still pay it off in 4 months. I just have to pay you 6 months worth of interest. Okay. But I usually, me personally, right, I usually do a 3 month guarantee. Hey, I'll loan you money. I don't want to loan it to you today. And you have some, you know, wham, bam, scam going on where you just needed this money overnight. And then tomorrow you pay me off, right? And I get nothing out of all this work and paperwork except that $350 underwriting fee. Not doing it. Loan extension, right? One time, 3 months. It's built into the loan, automatic. Loan extension points, 1 point. So if they don't pay it off in 6 months, automatically extends for another 3 and you owe them a point. Guaranteed minimum interest, 3 months. So on that extension, you're going to get all that interest, right? It's going to go through the full thing. LTV, right? 65%. So this is the standard, 60 to 70%. And it really kind of is. I mean, lenders will loan on less than 60, but they do have minimum loan amounts, right? It's usually around 25,000. They won't loan less than 25. Hey, you need 15 and 5 for this project. 15 buy and 5 rehab, you're still borrowing 20, 25 from me. Okay. That's the minimum I'll loan. And then all the calculations are based on that. Let's see. Recourse, non-recourse. Recourse just means it's got a personal guarantee, right? Or if you foreclose, you can go after the assets that are vested in the entity. Non-recourse just means if you foreclose, you take the property only as the collateral, right? In other words, I'll make you a 50% loan non-recourse, meaning if I had to foreclose on you, I'm just going to take the property and be happy with that because it's a 50% LTV, right? Let's see, late payment grace period, late payment fee, Texas statute, you know, whatever the standard is. Secondary on the property insurance, right? Make sure that you're listed on the insurance. Property remains non-occupied. That's the non-homestead affidavit, right? And a non-occupancy affidavit. No additional loans or liens on the property. So in other words, this says, it's an affidavit that says you will not take out a second, right? Because I may not want to deal with a second lien, if I want to, If I want to take a deed in lieu, because a deed in lieu doesn't wipe out a second lien, a foreclosure would. But hey, I'll take a deed in lieu, but I don't want to have to deal with a second lien and end up having to foreclose just for that reason, right? So you can get an affidavit for that. HOA and all taxes kept current, right? It's a requirement. Title insurance on the property, requirement. Maximum draws and cash up front. That's just your draw schedule for the rehab, right? How much cash up front? How much are the draws? Draw fee. So you can charge, right? You can. Loan servicing fee. Yeah, I don't charge either one of those, but you could. I don't know that I would, but let's see. Paperwork generation, closing cost. Borrower pays that, whatever the title company charges to draft those docs. They're going to do everything for you. Borrower pre-qualified for a conventional loan. We're not pre-qualifying, right? We know the investor. We've checked the project. We're happy with the project. We know the history of the investor. If you don't, you can do a pre-qualification, right, on them. Send them to an RMLO, just like you would doing a wrap on a borrower, or on a buyer, I mean. Borrower's personal equity at project start, right? So do they have skin in the game? Borrower's debt service and insurance. Borrower's debt service and insurance coverage. Make sure they have... That just means make sure that they're covered. If you got a 6-month loan, make it a 6-month policy, right? Don't do a year loan and then only get a 6-month policy. Go ahead and get the full year. Okay. So anyway, this is what I fill out and I send with a instruction letter to the title company to make sure that, you know, anything outstanding here, you know, required by title company, you know, review of the insurance policy, right? Stuff like that. So that's private lending, guys. It's not difficult. But there, you know, you do have to be a decent investor to loan to investors. But we can help you, right? I mean, that's the great thing. You guys have coaches. Your coach can walk you through this step by step. I mean, I've done it with my students and with my investors. If I've got somebody borrowing money or lending money, I go through this whole thing with them, right? Every step of the way. So, so make sure that your coaches are doing that for you. If you're inexperienced, that doesn't mean you can't be a lender. You just need somebody experienced coaching you through it, right? So, because it is a good way to get deals. All right. So I tell you what, I'm going to stop showing my screen here just to save on the recording space. And let's go ahead and get into some questions. We've got a few questions and a little bit of time here. So Lisa says, can you explain door knocking? So door knocking is one of the quickest ways to get a deal. But door knocking is it's a marketing tactic, right? It's a marketing strategy where we go and we find a foreclosure list and we go and door knock the list of properties going to foreclosure. We knock on the door. If a homeowner answers, we say, hey, my name's Chris. I've seen that this property is coming up on the foreclosure list. Want to make sure you were aware, number one. Number two, see if anybody had covered all your options with you to help you stay in the property or avoid the foreclosure, okay? And that's how I open it, avoid the stay in the property and avoid the foreclosure because that gets their attention, right? If you just say, hey, want to see if you're interested in selling the property before it gets foreclosed on, that's probably not the best way to do it, right? But door knocking it's just that, right? We line out all the properties, we map them out, and we drive from property to property, and we door knock those properties. We knock on the door and try and get a homeowner to answer and talk to them about their situation and see if we can help them avoid that foreclosure and ultimately acquire the property, right? Because people going into foreclosure, hey, I'm willing to cover all the strategies that'll keep them in a property. But if they're actually, ended up going to foreclosure, then I promise you most of those strategies are exhausted. And, their best option and often their only option is to actually sell the property. Okay. And we do have in REI Matcher, there's door knocking videos and a big dog buddy list, a door knocking buddy list. So we've got, some good resources for that. Okay. Lloyd says, can you provide contact info for the insurance company you recommended for Builders Risk and other real estate? So that's Mike Monzingo. Let me just pull up his contact info here and I'll shoot it out to all y'all. So let's see here. We've got Mike Monzingo. And his email is mike@knowyouragent.com. His phone number, this is his cell, he will answer, 215-385-6662. Okay, so I'll send that out to everybody. That's Mike Monzingo, great guy, big dog, investor. And he's also out at all the RIAs, right? So you should connect with him at a RIA, at the next RIA. Let's see. Movishar says, how do you respond to a lead from out of state? Just work it, girl. So Movishar, you work it just like any other lead. Now, with it being out of state, you may not have as much intel. And it's harder to arrive at a value, but you know, I work out of state leads all the time. We do them for our clients and for investors. We get a lot of lead generation that comes from out of state. Don't ask me how, but when you internet market, you know, there's actually no telling where your marketing actually goes. You know, you could try and target North Texas, you can target Texas, but your marketing goes all over the world if it's on the internet. So there's no telling who calls you, and we get a lot of those calls. So you just have to maybe talk to a local realtor, find a local investing club, talk to them. Maybe you can sell them the lead, turn it over. Maybe it's in a place that, you know, like there are a lot of properties in Arkansas or Oklahoma that I would consider for rental properties, right? So maybe it's a property that that I can, you know, turn into a rental for me personally in my portfolio. So I'm willing to look into those. But you just work it just like you would anything else. If you know how to do due diligence here, you know how to do it there. You're just lacking the tools, the resources to do it with, right? But you know what to do. You just don't know, you know, how to get it done. So find those resources locally on the ground, other investors, real estate agents. You know, like I said, Oklahoma, Arkansas, you know, if it's a great deal and somebody's offering me stuff, shoot, I'll drive up there. Look at it. I've done that before. So so definitely pursue any lead in any other state because, you know, again, our goal is to always monetize everything, right? Let's see. Talu says, what recourse do investors have when a buyer and or a title company threaten to close on a property despite an MOC? So if you've got a title company threatening to close over an MOC, then I'd kind of be surprised, right? Most title companies do not like to do that. If they do that, they've given it to an attorney to look at and validated that the MOC, the contract you have, not the MOC, but the contract you have is not valid to hold up against the transaction they're doing. In other words, if I buy a property from you, Mubashar, and put it under contract, and then you go and sell it to Kimberly, right? After I've put it under contract with you. And then you go to try and close with Kimberly. They see the MOC. They come to me. I refuse to release it. They say, well, we'll just close over it. Then I have recourse, right? That recourse is a lawsuit. Against the title company closing it, against you for closing it. But if the title company aims, well, hey, Chris, you know, your MOC here, you didn't sign the contract, so it's not valid, right? So we're going to go ahead and close and you can sue all you want to. It's not going to matter. So that's the deal, right? If you have recourse, but it has to be legal, legally binding, contract for the MOC to be good. Okay. So it all falls back to the contract. The MOC is just the notice, right? Memorandum of contract. It's just the notice that allows you to legally file that contract against the title of record so that it puts people on notice. It in and of itself is not a standing document. It's the contract that stands. And so if the contract was actually illegitimate, then or non-binding, then the MOC is worthless, okay? Let's see. Lloyd says, Who do you recommend for credit check services? Credit check services I do with, so if I were going to do a loan with somebody, and I wanted to run credit, I would probably go to my property manager, right? I've got several rentals. I've got a property manager that manages those. I would go to him and say, you know, hey, Kent, I've got this this loan I'm making. I want to run a credit check. I don't have access, because you don't, right? Running credit checks on people, you have to have a tool for that, a service, and you also have to have their permission, okay, and authorization and signature. And it costs, right? So I'm going to get that authorization filled out from my borrower. I'm going to give it to Ken and say, hey, would you run me a credit, run me a credit check on this? I'll pay you for it, right? It may cost you $15. I'll pay you the 30. Or he, you know, I've got several properties where he'd do it for me just at cost, right? Just to help me out, right? That's how you do it. I mean, you got to find somebody that has a service, because not everybody can just access and run credit checks on people. It's a very regulated thing. So just find somebody with the service. And again, you can pay people to do it. You can pay the title company. Maybe they have a service. Usually attorneys do. Like I said, lenders, RMLOs can do it. All right. Go to an RMLO and just pay them to do that. Right. You may not need any of the other services. Residential mortgage loan officer. Okay. Anybody who's a licensed residential mortgage loan officer can run credit checks. Let's see. Jose says, Chris, what part of real estate investment do you like teaching new big dogs? What part of real estate investment do you like teaching new big dogs? So what would your area of expertise in real estate investment be, in other words? To broadly answer your question, it's residential. Okay. It's single family residential, meaning 1 to 4 family properties. And what area of expertise? I can build a property from the ground up. I can do rehab from the bones out. I know lending very, very well, because I worked in a mortgage company for, 25 years. I know foreclosures extremely well, because I've managed those for, 25 years. My background, for you guys that don't know it, was default mortgage banking. Okay. My background was default mortgage banking. I worked for a Wall Street firm, a mortgage company. We were an investment firm. So we bought defaulted portfolios, non-performing and sub-performing, brought them into our shop. We got what we could reperforming, meaning we did a lot of these loan mods, a lot of forbearances, a lot of workouts, a lot of, short sales, a lot of that, all that stuff. Got the ones reperforming that we could, seasoned them, and then packaged them and sold them on Wall Street as securities. The ones we couldn't, we brought into my REO department, and I treated my REO asset managers like investors. I gave them a portfolio of, hey, here's, $300 million. I want you at the end of the day to bring me back $325 million. Okay. So go and invest in these properties, do what you need to do to make money on them. And they did that, right? We reviewed our assets just like you and I do as investors. How can I flip this asset, or can I put it into a rental service pool? Or this, that, and the other, right? You talk about all the hedge funds. I mean, we did all that stuff too. So residential properties and rehab and flips and, wraps and loans and foreclosing, default mortgage banking is my background. I love teaching it. It's kind of got everything to do with all the resi stuff, the residential stuff. But I love teaching more than anything. Right. I love sharing this and teaching it to you guys. That's what I really like doing. Actually, almost as much as rehabbing. I mean, I love to flip properties, because I like to actually get out and get my hands dirty and work on properties. But it's not the best use of my time, obviously. But I still do it now. Let's see. One more question, guys. So let me get this last question. We're at five after, so not too bad. If you've got questions, go ahead and get them in. I definitely want to get them answered for you. If not, we'll do this question and do announcements real quick. So let's see. So Talu asks, regarding private lending, what are the pros and cons for lenders getting points on the back end? Pros and cons for borrowers? Well, the pro for a borrower is they don't have to come up front with the money, right? The con for a borrower is they have to pay you the money up front. So that's less money in their pocket. For me as a lender, the pro is that, you know, it's riskier on the borrower, right? Because it's making them manage the project less. And so it's a higher opportunity for default, right? Not really, because that's, you know, a weak way to look at it, right? Just because you don't pay points on the front end, it really doesn't correlate to you not being able to afford this loan that I'm putting you in. If I thought that were the case, I actually wouldn't do it. That would be predatory. But pushing it all to the back, you know, it also comes out of the profit, right? So before any profits paid to investors, you know, all the loan costs come out, right? If you're pushing them to the back. So that's kind of the pros and cons for both sides. You know, I don't get it, until the loan's paid off, but at the payoff of the loan, I get more, you know, I get all the money at once. So, you know, like I said, give and take, it's not something I would do. I'll just do it if it's, you know, a fun loan or a really good loan. I'm hoping, you know, somebody defaults on. And like I said, I do tease my borrowers a lot. All right, guys, that was it. So very quickly, let me just mention bigdogcalendar.com. Let's see what's going on this week. Be sure and go to bigdogcalendar.com. All the workshops are at the top, and you can register for those workshops, okay? And then the calendar, where's the calendar? There it comes. The calendar is down below. And so today, let's see, we've got Houston RENC. Okay. So Houston RENC, if you're in Houston, get prepared. Next week, we've got Tuesday in San Antonio RENC at the Norris Conference Center. And then we've got the Dallas RIA next week, next Thursday at the Renaissance Dallas there in Addison, Renaissance Hotel. So, with that, guys, let's see. And then what's, and then Friday, there's the Houston Big Dog Six Pack event. You can go to the calendar and get all the information on that, okay? So, there you go. All right. So, with that, let's see if there's any more questions. Nope, that was it. So, wonderful. Hey, guys, thanks for joining. Appreciate you jumping on the call. Hope you all have a great day. Get out and get busy in your business, and we will see you all at your local RIAs. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.